This is West Virginia Morning from West Virginia Public Radio News. I'm Beth Voorhees. A new investigation that's airing on NPR this week has uncovered that some coal companies are working the system to avoid paying fines. The report also finds a connection between skirted financial penalties and injured coal miners. Mines with more delinquent fines also have higher rates of injured workers. NPR and Mine Safety and Health News sifted through citations and documents for more than a year to find the connection. Jessica Lilly spoke with NPR's Howard Berkus, one of the investigative reporters.
Well, Howard, let's first school us on what it takes to do an investigative report like this. What did you have to dig into?
For many years, news organizations have been reporting that so many mining companies are delinquent and by how much money and which mines they are. The question that we asked was, well, what's the consequence of that? What happens when these mines get away with not paying at those mines? What happens to the miners? How many violations are committed? How many miners are injured? What's the violations rate for delinquent mines compared to non-delinquent mines, all of which we disclose in our stories? And those sounded like really great questions, but boy, were they hard to answer. Because every delinquency, every assessed penalty has a different start date. And so we had to figure out how to take all these thousands and thousands and thousands of different start dates for each penalty to come up with the, periods that were relevant for figuring out violations and for figuring out injuries. And so I actually, with Ellen Smith at Mine Safety and Health News, we talked about doing this for probably 2 years. And what we were finally able to do, and it was only because at NPR we got an intern from the University of Missouri, Anna Boyko-Wyrock, who later went on staff, who was data savvy, and she figured out how to take raw government figures for injuries and violations and figure out how to make those work in the time frames that mines were delinquent, how to compare those things. Took a while to figure out how to do it. It's a very complex data assessment, but we were finally able to do it. And we've worked on this for more than a year, this project, but it was tough.
And I'm sure many of those documents were from the mining industry's government watchdog, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration. And of course, there is a system in which they inspect mines and write violations for safety hazards that come with a financial penalty. But your investigation found an issue with this system. Tell us more.
Yeah, and I want to point out that most mining companies pay their fines. It's only a small percentage, about 7%, that do not. And this was another reason why this was important to us, because we wanted to figure out what was happening at those mines that weren't paying. And it's this complex system of fines are levied. Mining companies can appeal those fines, and they do, and there's this process underway. The fines that we're talking about in our stories are final. Either the mining companies haven't challenged them or they've been upheld on appeal. And the Mine Safety Agency, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, will basically send out, reminders and payments, demands for payment. And then the Treasury Department will take over and they'll do the same thing. And they might even send the penalties to collection agencies. But the truth of the matter is that mining companies that don't want to pay don't have to, and nothing much happens to them. We found, and we're reporting, in fact, that there are federal court orders requiring payment, and many mining companies simply ignore those, and there isn't much follow-up. And the reason there isn't much follow-up and there isn't more done is really two reasons. One is, under the law, you can't shut down a mine simply because it hasn't paid its fines. MSHA doesn't have that authority under the law. And secondly, it takes a lot of work to establish what assets a mining company might have, and then to try to seize those assets to try to satisfy a court judgment or to force a company to pay. And the federal agencies involved, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, the Solicitor's Office of the Labor Department, they have not put the effort into doing that. They could. It does require an enormous amount of work, but they basically don't. So the bottom line is that a mining company that chooses not to pay basically doesn't have to. And the result is that, as we're reporting, there are many, many, many violations that continue to take place and thousands of miners that continue to be injured while these mines are delinquent.
You mentioned George Miller called them, some of them, outlaw operators. And as you point out in your report, Miller introduced a bill that would give mines 6 months to pay the delinquent fines, but also say, you also say it hasn't gotten any traction. The election will put Republicans in control of Congress. What are your thoughts about that?
There's been a bill lingering in Congress for years that would require payment within 6 months of a fine becoming delinquent, and after that 6 months, the mine could be shut down, and it would provide payment for the employees who were laid off for at least some period after that shutdown. But that bill hasn't gone anywhere, and it's not likely to go anywhere because Congress has not been interested in mine safety regulation. If they weren't interested after 29 miners were killed at Upper Big Branch in 2010, by the way, that was a Democratic Congress in both the House and Senate at that time. If Congress couldn't pass meaningful mine safety legislation after that disaster, I don't think this would move them either. There just simply isn't the will in Congress among Republicans and some Democrats as well to add additional regulations to the mining industry.
And that being said, what impact do you hope this series makes?
What we believe is the significance of this series is that it puts a different face on the issue of delinquent fines, that it's not a benign issue, that there is a consequence to not enforcing one key element of mine safety law, an element that is supposed to discourage mining companies from adopting unsafe practices or for continuing unsafe practices. There's supposed to be a cost to operating unsafely. And if you can get away without paying for penalties for unsafe practices, then there is no cost. And there's no encouragement to behave in the right way for these mines. So, my hope is that this issue is perhaps seen in a different way and appreciated in a different way. What happens as a result of that, I don't know, but ultimately the safety of miners is what's at stake in all of this.
Howard Berkus with NPR's Investigations Unit. Howard, thanks for your work on this report and your time.
Thank you.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Cloudy skies today with a chance of light snow. Temperatures will be in the 30s. A chance of light snow continues tonight with lows in the teens and 20s. Partly cloudy on Friday, highs only in the 20s and 30s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
The West Virginia Board of Education returned local control to Mingo County's Board of Education yesterday after nearly 10 years of intervention. That means there are currently two school systems left under some form of state control, Fayette and Gilmer counties. At yesterday's meeting, board members focused heavily on Fayette County's progress. Ashton Mara reports.
Every month, the West Virginia Board of Education holds a meeting to make decisions about policy, discuss long-term goals, and receive updates on how low-performing schools and school systems are progressing. And every month, Carolyn Arrett stands before them to share her thoughts on one of those school systems.
I'm here today to very briefly talk about the paper that you have on top. It is a study that you're going to be receiving from Fayette County.
Arrett is a former Fayette County Board of Education member and retired teacher, and in recent years, her county has been in trouble. So much trouble, in fact, in 2010, the state board intervened and took control of the county school system. They cited problems in finance, hiring practices, curriculum, and facilities, just to name a few. The study Arrett refers to was one the state directed the county to conduct in October of last year. At the time, the State Board of Education was considering a proposed facilities plan for Fayette County that within 3 years would have closed one of the smaller high schools, Meadow Bridge. As with many consolidation proposals, there was backlash from the community. State Board of Education President Gail Manchin.
What I kept hearing and other board members kept hearing was that people had been excluded from the conversation. They hadn't been able to be a part of what was going on. And that was when I asked for, could we just, you know, slow down, leave Meadow Bridge alone for a year, because that was the big issue at that time.
The county study, however, was expanded from just focusing on Meadow Bridge High School to include all of the secondary schools in Fayette County. Superintendent Serena Starcher presented the report that includes both a student and parent survey and some comparative analysis of test scores and graduation rates between the county's five high schools and similar schools in the state. What they learned from the survey? Students want more class options, things like art, theater, or foreign languages. Parents want their kids to be prepared to work in health science fields, like nursing. Fields surveyed students also showed an interest in. But Superintendent Starcher says the data shows her students aren't prepared to go into those fields.
Our math proficiency scores, as measured by the West test, aren't where they need to be for students to be proficient in mathematics.
According to the county's figures, rates range from about 48% of students proficient in math at Fayetteville High School all the way down to 21% proficient at Meadow Bridge. In reading and English, the five county high schools rank slightly higher, but all well below 50% efficiency. With the exception of Fayetteville, it sits at 55%.
For both enrollment and low SES, our schools are not performing even average compared to the high schools. They're like high schools, and we're underperforming at all of our schools.
And that underperformance is just one of many things the county and state Department of Education will need to improve before local control can be returned. The state board, however, has a successful track record in turning these counties around. In just the past year, the state has returned full control to three county school boards. Board President Gail Manchin thinks Fayette County can be just as successful as those counties. After all, the state returned local control of the school policies to the county earlier this year.
It's like a spider web. And you have all these different entities. You have your county board, you have your superintendent, you have the teachers, administrators, all of these, and students and parents, all of these play a role. Once you can get them aligned and all moving the same direction with the same voice, then you start seeing success. Do I see that possibility in Fayette County? I do. Not maybe today or tomorrow, but I see us beginning to move in the right direction.
For now, the State Board of Education remains in control of Fayette County's finances, facilities, hiring, curriculum, and others. The board only maintains full control over one other county, Gilmer. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Delbarton.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.